'Tis the season to be jolly and joyous and giving, guys. It's the holiday season. And please show your support this holiday season by supporting our lovely podcast.
Yeah, you could support us by donating today to our GoFundMe page. Mm-hmm. And you can find the links on our show notes. You'll find links on our Facebook pages. You could also find links on our Instagram. The link will be in the bio.
Mm-hmm. We are winter babies, too. So this will be a limited time offer from my birthday of December 6th
through January 17th, my birthday.
Yes. Yeah, so our birthdays, Christmas, Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, Epiphany, King Festivus. Of the Feast, Festivus.
You know, whatever you celebrate.
Yes. If you've enjoyed our podcast and you're a listener and you want to help us out with getting maybe some better equipment, just to give you guys overall better quality episodes, we would really appreciate it this wonderful holiday season. All right, guys, now back to the show.
Nicole.
Hey.
What's your favorite Christmas movie?
Christmas Story.
No.
Are we talking about a different Bob Clark Christmas movie?
We're talking about one of the most underrated Christmas movies of all time. Mm-hmm. A horror movie. Uh-huh. By the name of Black Christmas.
Black Christmas.
Which is turns out to be one of the original slasher films. And yes. Has a very choppy remake history. Which culminates right now with 2019's Black Christmas. Mm-hmm. And I cannot wait to talk about this movie, guys. Because nothing says Christmas like murdering sorority girls. In my opinion, guys.
So. Tis the season to be jolly.
Tis the season to be jolly, yes. Yes. And nothing gets Billy's jollies off than just like slashing up these poor girls.
Yeah.
I'm Rolando.
And I'm Nicole.
And this is Remakes, Reboots, and Revivals.
An original podcast.
About unoriginality.
Let's go, Billy. Billy is such a common name, I feel like, in horror movies. I hear Billy, I think of Scream.
Billy
was the killer.
Was it Billy?
Yeah, it was Billy.
Oh.
And then Billy...
I was thinking of the actor, Billy Crudup. Crudco?
Crudup, yeah.
Crudup.
That's random for you
not,
to think of.
Was he not in Scream?
No. That was... I don't even... Was that Skeet Ulrich who played
You're
Billy?
You're right. It was Skeet Ulrich who is now in Riverdale.
Oh, is he?
Yes.
Wow. He played Billy Loomis, and Loomis is a name that was used in Psycho and then in Halloween. And, you know, Halloween is very influenced by the movie we're talking about today.
Is it?
I would say so.
I actually would agree. It's crazy how many tropes are in this movie that if you look at the origins, it kind of started here. Without knowing. And it's so funny, right? Because Black Christmas is not a movie that really gets talked about a
not
lot
at all.
In like pop culture, right? It's a very like almost unknown movie, despite the fact that I think it is pretty good.
It's a deep dive horror film.
But before we start, I do want to say, everybody, if you're listening right now, thank you so much for donating to our GoFundMe. We actually hit our goal earlier last week.
We did.
And we are forever grateful. So as a result, we're going to boost up our goal just a little now until my birthday to see what else we can raise because, you know, clearly you guys love us and we just want to, you know, let you know it's just like we're still taking love. Yes. So continue to shower us.
Our arms are still open. So come hug us.
No, but thank you guys so much for whoever donated. You will be getting thank yous personalized.
Yes.
But and if you haven't and, you know, after the holiday season, you have some extra money to throw around. Not that I expect a lot from people after the holiday season to have much money left around. But if you never know, holiday bonuses kick in, right?
That's yes.
Throw us a buck or two. Mm-hmm. I'm not greedy.
Just give us your spare change. Anything. But thank you very much. We appreciate it a lot. So, as always, we are also joined by our producer, Eddie Z.
Hi, everybody.
Well, we are really excited. It's Christmas week. And there is no better way to celebrate. Excuse me, that went down wrong. And there is no better way to spend the holiday season than talking about some good old-fashioned horror movies.
Yeah.
So let's get in the horror history, shall we? It's 1974. A fantastic year for movies. Highest grossing film that year was Blazing.
I just want to point out that you say a fantastic year for movies like every year.
No, I don't.
Yes, you do. I would say, like, if we listen to every episode, like, majority of them, you're going to say,
oh, we should clip it.
All right, see if you beg to differ when I tell you what came out in 1974.
All right.
The highest grossing film that year was Blazing Saddles, which happens to be my favorite comedy.
Okay.
Or one of my favorite comedies.
It's a good movie.
Also, Young Frankenstein. Mel Brooks had a great year that year.
Yeah, clearly.
The Towering Inferno also came out that year.
I've never seen that.
Oh, so my God. That's
good movie. Great disaster movie because that was all the rage in the 70s. The Conversation, which I'm sure you watched in film school.
Oh, yeah. Conversation with Gene Hackman. Yes.
Chinatown.
Oh, Chinatown is a wonderful movie.
The Godfather Part 2.
Okay.
And, of course, Murder on the Orient Express came out in 1974.
Which we covered very early in our podcast history.
We
did.
And we might be revisiting the Hercule Poirot franchise again shortly.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately.
No. Take that back.
Why?
Because it's not unfortunate. Murder mystery is fun. We should be doing them more. Did you
guys
see
Knives
Out yet?
But are we talking about the same actor?
Oh, true. But at least we'll get to see the original Death on the Nile.
Okay.
Any hoodles. So Black Christmas also came out this year. Didn't do well when it came out.
Uh-huh.
And it actually didn't even get good press. But it's reclaimed its fame with horror movie fanatics.
Enthusiasts.
Yeah. People who really, really know their horror know this. This is not a film that's well known. This is not like a household horror film.
It's not your Halloween.
No, it's not Halloween. It's not even Friday the 13th at this point. So it's amazing that it's been remade twice. But
crazy. It's so interesting, right? Because when I heard the 2019 remake, I actually had forgotten there was that the 2006 version was itself a remake.
I did too, yeah. That movie is very forgettable. But so I feel like it's unjustly so because this movie was kind of like it was the first to do anything, but it was an important film to put things in motion. There's a common misperception that this is the first film to have the POV of a killer in a horror film. It's not.
Okay.
One of the earliest ones I can remember is in Peeping Tom from 1960. Mm-hmm. And also, this is not one of the first films that did not show the killer at the end. Spoiler alert. And also, it's one of the first films that had horror holiday theme, which is something that John Carpenter, who was a big fan of this movie, was very inspired. He almost made Halloween as a big sequel to Black Christmas.
Oh,
you know, well, if this killer was found hospitalized, and then came back on another holiday, and it was Halloween.
Oh, like the holiday killer from Batman.
Yes, exactly. Well, okay, sure.
I think he's known as the Calendar Man.
Is that?
Yeah.
I kind of like that. I want to read more about
The Halloween Killer. The Halloween Killer was the origin story for Two-Face. It's like a big mob story epic.
It's not Harvey Dent?
Harvey Dent. No. So the Holiday Killer was kind of a mob murderer.
Yeah.
He was killing off mob members, and people suspected it was Harvey Dent. And through actions, he would eventually become Two-Face.
Interesting.
And it's like a really epic story, but... there's also Calendar Man, who literally, his whole gimmick is a calendar. So anyway.
It's April Fool's.
Little Batman history there, guys.
All right. Well, I mean, ever since then, though, I mean, there's probably a horror film for almost every special occasion. Except
Leprechaun.
For Thanksgiving. Yeah. There's even like an Easter horror.
No, there is actually now a Thanksgiving horror TV show on Hulu.
Oh, is there?
It's like, what's it called? It's like some pilgrim lady who like comes and murders children. I'm not even kidding about this. This is a true story. It's on Hulu. It's a TV show.
Well, how much do you guys want to see Eli Roth's Thanksgiving?
Oh.
Did you ever see the Grindhouse trailer?
No.
He made up of Grindhouse when it came out. They had four fake movie trailers with it, and one of them was Eli Roth's Thanksgiving.
Oh.
And it was, you guys should watch it. Sure. We'll put it in the show notes. But actually, so this film was before all these movies came out.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie wanted to be more of a psychological horror film. Oddly enough, it kind of spurred a whole genre of the slasher genre by at least influencing Halloween, which is definitely the film that like kicked that off. But this film was actually not intended to be that way. Let's think about this. 1974. There was something going on in this country that this really, really speaks to, which is funny, even though this is a Canadian film. This is a Canadian film.
Oh, I didn't know this was Canadian.
There were so many times where they were like, I went out. Like, you know, you couldn't.
I noticed there were accents. I thought they were just like college kids from international studies or something.
No, they're just Canadians. And it's a Canadian film, and it was actually inspired by a Canadian incident. But, you know, this is the 70s. This is the age of serial killers.
Right.
And
I think
this
we spoke about this when we were talking about Halloween.
Yes.
Yes.
So, and that's why these movies came out. It makes sense that the slasher genre is born in the age of Ted Bundy and all these people. So this actually, though, was based on a series of murders that took place in the Westmount section of Montreal. A man went in and assaulted and killed about four women who were not college girls. They were older women.
Oh.
And I think Roy Moore, who wrote this, his original script was that. But when they decided to make it a movie, they're like, let's make it younger women all in one house that are being targeted on like the same night.
Mm.
And then they came up with, and he rewrote it for Black Christmas. This is directed by Bob Clark. Like I said earlier in the opening, Bob Clark's known for directing another Christmas movie, A Christmas Story.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I missed that reference when you said that. That's hilarious. Okay.
Two great Christmas movies that he is responsible for.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I think A Christmas Story, as much as overplayed it is a great movie.
Yes, I would agree.
So.
That's interesting.
I think that's fantastic. Good for him.
The only person who's made a bigger mark on Christmas is Jesus.
Yeah. Or the Grinch.
Jesus.
Yeah.
That's hilarious. Okay.
But yeah, it's funny in two, because when this came out, you know, this film was not released around Christmas. It was released in October.
Uh-huh.
I think that was also part of the reason why it did not do very well.
Right. I mean, if you're doing a Christmas movie, obviously you want to release it in Christmas. I don't think this current release, the 2019 version, has found that success.
Yeah.
Because it's being released around Christmas time. You would assume.
But it was also released on Friday the 13th.
Which is smart, Friday the 13th. Right? Like, it's a horror movie, and you're doing, you know, witchy things.
Uh-huh. So. I think there's nothing worse than having a Christmas movie come out on Christmas, because that's when everything's over. People are probably not even going to see it on Christmas Day.
That's so true, because the only people who go to the movies on Christmas are probably Jewish people.
Yeah. Which makes sense. I mean, yeah. Yeah.
And Jewish people, and I would say the Nieves family, because, like, my family was notorious for going to Christmas movies.
Really?
Yeah. Not Christmas movies per se, like going to the movies on Christmas. They're usually emptier and like.
Really? I've never gone on Christmas Day.
It's not a bad experience. I think I saw The Prince of Egypt on Christmas Day, for example.
Aw. Well, so essentially, the plot of Black Christmas is going to be the same throughout all of these remakes.
The basic plot.
The basic plot is that sorority girls who all live together in a house are targeted by someone who is slowly killing them off on Christmas Eve, essentially, or the days leading up to Christmas. I think they're all on Christmas Eve.
Usually. They're usually on Christmas Eve. I think some of them like start like the day before Christmas Eve.
Yeah, well, Black Christmas takes place a couple of days, whereas the other two, I think, kind of take place in a night or two.
Yeah.
Like one is one night. Okay. Right. So that's the basic plot of it. The characters of this are, we have Olivia Hussey, who's known as playing Juliet in Romeo and Juliet, and also playing Mary in Jesus of Nazareth.
Oh.
She and she was also in It.
Another important Christmas story.
Another, yes. So she's made her mark on Christmas. Yeah.
Who?
She wasn't the Jessica Chastain character. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So Olivia Hussey's essentially the main character. Her name is Jess.
I do love the name Hussey.
Miss Hussey.
Yeah. God, growing up with that name. Excuse me, Hussey.
Well, it did pretty well for her. But she's Jess. Jess has a boyfriend named Peter, who is played by, and his name's really interesting, Keir Dullea. I think I'm saying it right.
I don't know. Those Canadians. Yeah, crazy Canadians.
Crazy name. He was in 2001 Space Odyssey, if you know him before. And then the other girls are Barb, who is played by Margot Kidder. Later in Superman fame, she's Lois Lane.
Yes.
There is Phil, played by Andrea Martin, who is just a character actress who is the one who returns in Black Christmas 2006.
Was she the house mother?
Yes.
Ah, okay.
And then Claire.
Just Claire.
Yeah, just Claire.
There is a house mother in this movie, too.
There is a house mother. What was her name? Mrs. Mack?
I don't remember her name, but she was
an alcoholic.
She was a raging alcoholic, brushing her teeth. And what does she use to wipe, to rinse her mouth? She looks for, like, the Jack Daniels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Hilarious. All these women were so flawed.
Yeah, well, Barb was also an alcoholic.
Was she an alcoholic, or was she just a cool girl who just liked to get drunk and like smoke cigarettes?
Almost every scene she was drunk.
She was. I thought Margot Kidder.
I love the way he says, she's just a cool girl drinking and smoking.
Talk towards the makeup. I thought she was cool. Margot Kidder also played her so well.
Yeah.
Like, I think. I think watching Margot Kidder's performance really made me appreciate Margot Kidder so much, because she was just like, she has such a sexy voice,
mm-hmm.
and she's just like, just from her physique too, like the way she just carries herself.
Yeah.
She has like a presence of just like utter coolness.
She does.
And, like, for example, when, and she's just so snarky.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, when she's telling the police officer like the her phone number, right?
The extension.
It's like fellatio. And the poor cop had no idea what a fellatio, what fellatio means, right?
Uh-huh.
So she's, so she just goes with it, right? She's just like F E L. She's like, oh, yeah, Margo Kidder.
That was what he got for being a dick.
He was a huge dick. Yeah. Cops tend to be a dick in all these movies.
Yes.
That's like the common theme.
Cops can't help you, essentially. In these
cops
movies.
Can't help you, or cops don't believe women.
Yeah,
tends to be something that's prevalent in these movies. In these stories.
Well, even though there's a lieutenant in this movie, Lieutenant Fuller, played by John Saxon,
he's not a cop. He's an officer of the law.
Yes.
But like when I mean cops, I mean like
Just
regular
your average
uniform police officers. Like they tend to, and historically, and I would say like the argument has always been that like they just tend to not believe women.
Yes.
In general.
Yeah.
Media portrays it as such, and I think there's a lot of research out there that shows it's just like men, you know, male cops just have a, just usually brush off women's complaints and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really sad if that's a statistic.
But yeah, but I think that's an important part of the story because, mm-hmm. you know, these women are getting harassed over the phone by somebody.
Terribly harassed.
Yes.
Like this guy is performing a 3-act play on the other line, but it's horrifying.
And, you know, the women, they go to the cops and the cops are just like, oh, it's probably just your boyfriend's playing a prank on you. And,
Yeah.
They just refuse to believe it until people start disappearing. A child ends up dead on in a park.
Yeah.
And that's finally when, like, the cops are finally taking it seriously, specifically the higher-ups.
Yeah, no, you and the audience are left in the dark as much as these girls are because we never see... We see his point of view, so we know when he's about to attack someone.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, we don't know what he looks like. We don't know where he came from. We know that he's crashing in their house.
Yes.
For the most part. And
in
then
the attic.
And then the movie ends and there's no resolution to it. And so he's terrorizing them by phone calls. This is an important element that somewhat gets played in all of the other versions. He's just going on and on about nonsense, and then he usually ends with "I'm gonna kill you," but the word Billy is thrown out, so he's like has his persona that he's Billy
and Agnes is the other one.
It's like this whole situation he's reenacting.
Where's Agnes?
Yeah,
where's Agnes? Oh, my family now. I think he says that in that one too.
Yeah,
in the original one.
Oh, does
like,
he?
Because I know I'm not jumping ahead here, but the 2006 version kind of just takes the original idea of who this Billy character was
and goes to town on it.
And goes to town with it. But like, yeah, that was all original. It's not canon, but like it was all from the writer's idea of the actual story. So
okay, well, I mean, so this guy's genuinely horrifying, and then eventually we come to believe as the audience, because we want to solve this murder as much as everyone else does, that the killer might be Peter.
Yes, the boyfriend.
The boyfriend of Jess.
Because Jess is pregnant,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, as a strong, independent lady, she's just like, I'm having an abortion.
Yeah.
I was surprised at how, like, heavy this plays into the storyline, right? Where Jess is making some valid arguments, right? Of, like, the fact is just like, I have my whole life ahead of me. I'm not going to be saddled with a kid, despite the fact that the other guy is basically calling her a murderer.
Yeah, yeah. You know? He calls her a selfish bitch and all this stuff when he expects her to drop her life for him.
Mm-hmm.
And then just storms out and then continues to, like, hide in trees and stalk her.
Yes. Yes.
So even if he's not the murderer, he's an asshole and a problematic character.
And so you're just led to believe that, like, oh, it's him. He's killing all these, like, sorority girls for some reason.
And then the movie essentially ends with him breaking into the basement where she is clearly frazzled. And he just pursues her,
and then it cuts to the police officers arriving, and like when we cut to them, we heard her screaming, and then we see the two of them kind of like looking unconscious, but she turns out to be alive, and I kind of think the implication there is possibly that she was self-defense.
It just seems like she solved it. He was indeed the murderer. She killed him in self-defense. She goes to bed, you know, everyone's like, well, seems like Peter was the killer. And then the movie ends with you hearing that the killer is very much still in the attic, and that she's probably going to die. And it's really disturbing.
A little bit, for sure. Yeah, I guess it's just like kind of that whole not knowing for sure. Because there is that sense of like, oh my God, but who did this? Mm-hmm. Who is this guy who's just living in the attic?
Yeah.
Why is he living in the attic, you know?
Uh-huh. I think that having this killer be this unknown figure that just, like, comes from out of nowhere and enters into your life does a really good job at mm-hmm. making the audience know the fear that was going on for young women in the 70s of these men who were out committing these murders, these serial killers. So, like, when I watch it, it gives me this perturbing feeling, and I'm like, oh my God, you know, like, this is what it's like to be terrorized. It's not like everything comes out with a happy ending, and then she finds him, she kills him, it's someone you know, and then case solved. Like,
yeah.
A lot of times these people fucking get away with it.
Right.
For so long. And they're not people that you know. They're just people who pick you and just do terrible things to you.
It's you know, I think that's the other element of this, right? Where yeah. there is, like, an element of, like, chaos, like, of yeah. the chaos of it. What is the other, like, you know, the randomness of it all, right? Yes. Like, why did these poor women get targeted and stuff? And this movie really does, I think, I appreciate the ambiguity, right? Mm-hmm. Because I think the other thing this film does wonderfully well is this sense of tension that the movie builds.
Yeah.
Which is something that I think the other two films will come to lack.
I definitely agree. I think also they didn't overuse Christmas as a character.
For sure. Not at all.
Not at all. The cinematographer was great, and he definitely, I think he shot everything. He probably did the measurements, and he went a stop down or two because it's incredibly dark and it has this, like, really dark feeling.
It does. And I think the other cool trick that they do is, like, kind of having two different lenses.
Yes.
Like, kind of melded into one. So you see, like, one thing in focus, and then you see the other.
Yeah.
You know, whoever's close up in focus. Those are just interesting film techniques that, like, you don't really yeah. get that a lot anymore with digital filmmaking.
No, you don't. And also, this was the 70s, so, like, that POV of him climbing into the attic was really interesting. You know, the DP just essentially strapped it to his shoulder and climbed the building himself to get that effect.
It's crazy.
Which is really dedicated, awesome filmmaking.
Yeah, it's crazy.
So, one last thing I want to talk about with this movie is women. The women in this film. And the fact that I feel like this is one of the films that solidified how important women will become to the horror genre.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that they were really strong characters. I thought they were really different.
I think they were all kind of realized. I don't know if they necessarily realized by today's standards, but yeah. like, I think for a genre movie, despite the fact that this is, like, not a genre film yet, right? But for a genre movie, I think the characters are all distinct enough.
Yes.
That, like, you build a relationship with them.
Uh-huh.
You know, from specifically Barb and not Jess. Clint. Jess, thank you. Yeah. Jess.
Specifically them, for sure. I thought actually one of the best shot scenes was the murder of Barb.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Oh, that was actually beautiful, right?
That, like, was
the
really glass, beautiful.
And you'll just see, like, the black backdrop, and it's the hand coming mm-hmm. in and out.
Beautifully yeah. shot. And just Barb too, like you said, well, she's cool, or maybe she's an alcoholic, but, like, this girl, she's got, like, these really strong issues, you know, and it's like you actually feel for her. She's not a dick. Mm-hmm. You actually like her.
Right.
Like, you get what's going on and why she is the way that she is, and yeah. she's charming. And then Jess, you know, she's, for 1974 and stuff, she, like, looks at Peter and is like, I'm not going to throw away my life because you want me to.
No, for sure. For sure.
She was, like, really, like, strong. I mean, even though, you know, all this awful shit was happening and she didn't know how to deal with it. At the whole, she was a pretty strong character. She mm-hmm. was really realistic in that way.
Yeah.
So, and I guess because this is, like, one of the first slasher films, attacks on a sorority, I feel like women, and then with having Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Was that before or after this movie?
A couple years before.
Before, okay.
And then Halloween a couple years later, I just feel like women now are instilled in horror.
Yes, that would make sense, right?
Yeah.
And I think, I don't know, there's something, I know, Eddie, you have a problem with this, right? Where you're not a fan of seeing, like, women being tortured, right?
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
No one is a fan.
Well, no. In terms of, like, but for the genre, it's like, it is itself part of the genre.
Yes, it is.
It just is.
Especially the next one.
Right. So yeah. I think here you see the torment that these women experience, but, like, it's not, even the murder scenes are filmed, like, in a way that, like, yeah, there's a little bit of blood and gore, but, like, it's almost, like, very artistic.
And, like, no, for sure.
Like, they're not exploiting the violence.
No, not at all. It's not a very gory film. In terms of the kill count, I think there was only 6, maybe 7 people killed. And even then, like, sometimes you didn't even see it.
It's true.
It was implied. And then when you did see it, you got these really inspired scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So I really appreciated that too, because it wasn't, yeah, this movie wasn't about, and now we're going to watch you be murdered, and this is how she gets murdered, and this part of her mm-hmm. body gets ripped off. It wasn't about that.
Right.
Which is why Bob Clark also wanted it to be more of a psychological horror film, which is why I think the ending was so perfect, because it fucks you up.
Yeah, for sure.
At least it fucked me up when I first saw it.
I have a little fun fact about this movie.
Yes, sure.
You know the... So it's interesting, right? Watching some of the tropes, like the lone survivor. Like, you see it like kind of being developed, right? I know we got mm-hmm. that with Texas Chainsaw, but like... Yes. You're still seeing... Like, this is laying some foundational footwork and stuff. But I think my favorite one that it laid out, that is the first one to do, is the call is coming from within the house.
Yes, yes.
This is the first movie to use that line, and it will be something that... Yeah, it turns out it's like...
No. I don't think it's the first movie. Go ahead.
Because I looked it up on tvtropes.org.
Oh, yeah?
It's interesting, right? Like, how... Because that's something you'll just see, like, in movies up until... I think you probably won't see it much anymore, mm-hmm. only because of, like, you know, cell phones and stuff. But, like,
yeah.
Scream, I think, was the last contemporary film to use it effectively.
For sure.
You know, so...
The calls are coming from within the house. That's such a great line.
It is.
You know, actually, now that I think about it, I feel like horror films had women, like, really be installed in them even before that. You know, from early on in, like, Cat People in the 40s, Psycho in 1960, Peeping Tom also in 1960. But I feel like the slasher genre with women in particular, this is also, I guess, I just wanted to correct that statement.
Yeah, not horror, slasher. The slasher yeah. is its own kind of.
It is, yeah. yeah. And even, like, Rosemary's Baby, one of the best horror movies ever, you know.
I got some fun facts, too.
Yeah, sure.
So this movie, when it was supposed to be released for television premiere as one of those Saturday night at the movies,
mm-hmm.
It was called Stranger in the House. Now, there was a...
Which is a wonderful Tamia song.
So there was a little controversy on this because a couple of weeks before it was supposed to premiere... two girls, mm-hmm. Chi Omega Sorority House, were mm-hmm. killed, and two other girls were attacked.
Oh.
By later, the killer was found out to be Ted Bundy.
Oh.
So, but before that, it was still like, he was still out there. Uh-huh. The governor at the time had asked NBC not to premiere.
Out thing. Of fucking respect.
Yeah, out of yeah. that. So NBC was able to work something out with Florida as well as the neighboring states at that time.
It's so interesting, right? Because like, there was a point here in American history where media would like kind of put off any movies that have like a lot of excessive violence because of shootings.
Yeah.
And now that's not the case anymore because it's so common that it's yeah. just like, nope, we're just going to air our How stuff sad. When it has to air.
We're just so desensitized.
Or it's just, oh, we can't just keep pushing off movies or they'll never premiere. That yeah, was that's the main, that's the other that's main true. Reason why.
And hopping off of your fun fact, you know that there's another horror movie called Silent Night, Deadly Night about a killer Santa.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
It's yeah. ridiculous. Yeah. Ugh,
man.
Yeah. Capitalizing on holiday themed horror movies.
Hey, you know.
So, capitalizing on horror themed horror movies in the year 2006. A memorable year, actually. not a memorable because we know these movies and it was recent, but I didn't actually, proving you wrong. I didn't like this year for movies.
I would argue it's usually just the first one, but go on.
I'm doing this just to spite you. The best picture winner of 2006 was The Departed, which we actually covered in
which we did cover, episode. And we both kind of don't like, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't mind it, but it's just when that's like the best film of that year, like really. Because the other movies it came out with was Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest.
Oh, that's a good one. That's the first one.
No, that's the second.
Oh,
or I don't even know. Yeah, it's the second.
Oh, you're right. The Curse of the Black Pearl is the first
yes.
one.
Yes. Da Vinci's Code, you know, Casino Royale, Night at the Museum, Cars,
wow. Mission even Impossible Pixar had 3. A bad, even yeah. Pixar had this a bad a, year.
So it's just like, okay. 2006, I feel like, in honesty, wasn't not a very inspired year for movies.
Clearly not.
And
although it makes you what now you see why it won the best picture.
The Departed, yeah. I think it was up against The Queen, a movie we all remember. Mm-hmm. Notes on a Scandal. They're fine movies. They just don't echo in time.
Right.
Anyway, topping it off, coming out, I believe, on Christmas Day, Harvey Weinstein had a really big hand. Yeah, it did come out Christmas Day. In actually re-editing this film.
Yes.
So the way that this movie is, I credit to the disgustingness of Harvey Weinstein. And we can all agree that that man's terrible. I'm not saying anything political here.
No. I mean, let's complain about him for a little bit. Can you believe?
Such a trash
Can you believe he went to court in like a walker? And the next day he's seen like in public, like walking just fine.
Yeah, he's such a fucking dipshit.
He's the worst.
He really is the worst. Yeah. And to prove that he's the worst, you should probably see Black Christmas, because the shit done to women just for the sake of shit being done to women, to call it horror film, is ridiculous.
But can you blame Harvey Weinstein on that exclusively? Because at this point, we've already had movies like Hostel.
No, I'm not. Hostel 2. I'm not completely blaming him per se. I mean, I'm just saying it's, you know, he's gross as fuck.
I mean, he's just perpetuating it. But like, I don't know.
No, well, the horror movie genre in total, I think in the early 2000s had kind of lost itself. I mean, any other memorable movies from that era that we could think of horror wise? Not really.
Saw.
2003. Yeah, okay, look at what horror had become. Really, yeah, it was just like
horror became like gore. Much more gory.
Really gross stuff. Not my kind of cup of tea, and when I do like it, I like it like when the Italians did it. Because it was also just clearly... Like
spaghetti sauce? The mutters under your breath.
Spaghetti sauce. No, it's just also, it was more like a, I don't know, maybe I'm partial to it. Maybe it was because the 70s and like the visual effects was not what it is now. And it didn't look as real, which is why it was more enjoyable.
Right.
Because it was clearly like makeup art and effect art.
Okay.
Where now it they spend so much time making it look real and gory. And then it's just like not even like, oh, where's the art in this? Anyway, that's my own opinion though. And if you fight me on it, I will welcome your opinion. And I want to hear what you have to say to that. Even though this was in the environment that this film was existing in, and like this is, you know, the standard that horror movies are going through, I think that even horror movie fans do not like this movie.
I would agree. Despite the fact that it actually did pretty well in the box office, right?
Did it?
I think it was like a success.
I know it had a controversy around its release date. People didn't like the fact that it was being released on Christmas.
15 years ago, on Christmas Eve, his family became his victims.
What have you done?
So, 2006, Black Christmas, which some people call it Black Xmas because I think they promoted it that way. I don't know if it's officially Black Xmas or not.
Oh, I've seen it as Black Christmas, but I guess the X is because it's just like hot women.
You know? True. Well, okay, well, talking about cast, we got a great cast for this. We got Casey Cassidy as Kelly Presley, who's essentially the main character. She's the least well known though, I think, out of everyone here.
I think she's from Arrow.
She's
I don't know who she's on Arrow, but if you look at her resume,
you think she's on Arrow.
I'm pretty sure she's on Arrow.
Okay.
Or was. Arrow's canceled, so.
We have Michelle Trachtenberg,
who I love from Buffy.
From just a lot of 90s movies.
Harriet the Spy.
Yeah. She's in this. Her character's name is Melissa. We have, who's now practically a scream queen, Mary Elizabeth Winstead is in
who
this.
Who is Heather. She?
Really?
I have no idea who she is.
Well, she was also in the Thing version, but she was in Death Proof. She was in Scott Pilgrim. She was in some of the Die Hard movies. I mean, Mary Elizabeth's pretty prominent now.
Yeah, I have no idea who she is.
Well, Andrea Martin returns. This time she's the house mother.
Yes.
And, of course, Lacey Chabert.
Who
Gretchen Wieners.
Gretchen Wieners, yes. Who was the hot older sister?
Lee? That was Kristen Cloak.
Is she famous? I feel like I've seen her before, but like she just has like a presence to her.
Does she?
I thought so.
Okay. I thought her death was the worst. You raised the bar so many times with deaths and that's how she dies? Okay, she got off easy. But so in this movie, I think, because this was directed by a man that you've never heard of. And I don't think he directed anything else other than this. Glenn Morgan. The only other movie he directed was Willard in 2003. Crispin Glover.
I think Willard was the skinny man from Charlie's Angels.
Yes, Crispin Glover.
Okay, I'm thinking of Wilfred. That's the dog movie. That's also a TV show with Elijah Wood.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. My bad, everyone.
Well, James Wong produced this.
James Wong.
Yeah, who's now really known in the horror genre.
Yes.
So they really based this character of Billy. They took this idea of Billy that was just mentioned in the 1974 one. They made him a character and they gave him this whole backstory. And Agnes, too, who was also mentioned on the phone. And they based it off of Edmund Kemper.
That's the guy. All right, Ed Kemper, the guy who had like a box full of vaginas?
He might have. I know Edmund. He's really disturbing. The thing that I know about Edmund Kemper is that he beheaded his victims and he kept them on like sticks.
Oh, is he the one who also had like, I think he had a lampshade made of skin.
He might have. I don't know. So. He did some gross stuff. He killed his mother.
Uh-huh.
I think he might have killed his grandparents and he did something really disgusting with the head of his mother.
I think he fornicated with it, if I remember correctly. Yeah.
Really terrible stuff. So, so they took that. And they put it into essentially the movie because Billy, I don't know why they had to do this whole thing where apparently this character of Billy Lenz has yellow skin.
Yeah. Well, to make it creepier. I don't know what it was. I will say, though, the yellow skin, as much as it didn't translate well when he was an adult, there was a visual. I think the visual colors of like the flashbacks might be some of the more interesting stuff that this movie does, which is the lighting. Okay. And it's never a good sign when you say it's just like, that movie was terrible, but the lighting was good.
Yeah.
But I can compliment this movie did have excellent lighting.
Yeah, even though, I mean, that house was over-decorated for Christmas. And like the set designer was like, we're putting Christmas lights everywhere. Even in like the hallways. And I was just like, why is this hallway blinking with this many lights? I would never go to sleep in this house. But I digress. So the story of Billy is that he was born with yellow skin and his father loved him, but his mother hated him. And then his mother got a lover and They killed the father.
The mom killed the father.
Yeah, the mom killed his father and then adopted this new man to be her husband. One night while she's trying to have sex with her husband, he's too drunk to, so she goes up and rapes her child.
Yes.
Which is also like, really, movie? Why are we going here?
And then she gives birth to Agnes.
And she's like, well, this is my real child now. And keeps Billy in the attic.
And
that's where he lives out his life.
Billy will eventually go crazy, break out, pop out Agnes's eyes.
Yes.
And that's a common theme throughout this movie for some reason, eyeballs.
Yes, I don't know why. Agnes, his mother, or the baby Agnes?
No, baby Agnes.
No.
Agnes is the mom, the baby.
He pulled out her eyes?
Yeah, he pulled out her eye. He ate her eye. And so Agnes.
I thought it was his mother.
No. His mom, he kills her, and then like he makes cookies out of her skin.
Okay. Oh, yeah, that's right. And he eats his mother. Yeah. So yeah, they base this on some real
messed
stuff.
Up shit. It's a gross. This movie is gross. I'm going to be up front here and say this is actually one of my favorite B movies. I've seen this so many times in college.
Oh my God,
high. And it's just like, because like the movie, as far as I just complimented it, it's like visual, like in terms of lighting. I think it had great lighting. I think where it suffered was its sound design. Because there's a part where, like, for example, the mom crushes the ornament. Mm-hmm. And the sound that they use was like glass breaking on like a wall or something. And it's the stupidest fucking thing.
Like, interesting choice for the artist.
It's this movie is just not good, guys. But it has forever will have a place in my heart because I used to watch this so much.
That's interesting. Wow. I saw it once and that was enough for me. this movie is incredibly violent. The first murder happens within 2 minutes of the film.
Agnes is the murderer for the most part. So there's two stories happening here, right? Where Agnes is the one who is the one inside the house.
Yeah.
And her father, who after he committed these crimes was taken to an insane asylum, he escapes on Christmas Eve and he's making his way home. And eventually the two of them will come together to try to kill this last girl, the sole survivor.
Yes. Okay. That's true. That makes a lot of more sense. That actually kind of went over my head when I watched it. But
I could see why the whole plot was confusing.
It was very confusing. Spatial relationships in this movie just like threw me off. I was like, wait, where are they?
Yeah.
But then how did this? They're there now? It's weird.
A lot happens in this movie.
They're brother and sister.
No. Yeah. Well, they're brother and sisters, but they're also father and daughter.
Yeah, father and daughter. Okay. Yeah, so Agnes is pretty much brutally. Okay, pause really quick. Eve? You remember Eve? It's the weirdest thing in this. This is why this movie
is
bad.
It's Eve the nerd?
Mary Elizabeth Winstead is one of the only people who's like, because they're getting the calls again.
Uh-huh.
So they're like, we need to call the cops. Oh, yeah. Because also, after all this horrible murder happened in the house, someone had the bright idea to rent it out as a sorority house. So 20 years later, these women are living in this house where all these murders took place. I would never. But they're getting calls on Christmas Eve.
Okay.
And Mary Elizabeth is just like, we need to call the cops. And she walks away. And then this girl who just, I guess they make her look weird because she's got glasses in her hair back.
Yeah, yeah. She looks like
Happy Christmas.
Like Lee Rachel Lee Cook in She's All That. That's what she looked like.
Yeah, pretty much
before
like
the makeover.
And then she gifts Mary Elizabeth Winstead a fucking callback to the original, the unicorn, ice unicorn thing, which also is like, okay, wow, this is just to put this in there. And then we never see her again.
Yeah.
Until she's murdered.
Because I think they were trying to like, it was like a red herring. Like, Agnes.
They did it once.
It was.
They did not follow through on it. It was so terrible. I was like, oh my God, this is such poor filmmaking.
Right. I think this movie is a great example of studio interference.
Yes.
And what a detriment it can be for films. We've only reviewed a handful of these movies where studio interference has really been a big problem. Like I told you how Suicide Squad, that was one of the biggest problems with Suicide Squad. Despite the fact that we wouldn't cover that movie, we talk about the Joker, but that's a movie that really suffered because of studio interference. And I think it just goes to show you that like there's a difference between the business of filmmaking and a difference between the creatives of filmmaking. And when they clash, it usually goes poorly.
That's so interesting because I did read that originally they wanted the film to end with her in the hospital receiving a phone call, but I guess Harvey Weinstein went back and filmed that, what we got from the ending.
That whole ending?
Which was ridiculous. That was one of the worst things. It's like the night ended, they went away, cut movie. No, it continued on for another, 15, 20 minutes of just more deaths?
Right, which is why I appreciate it makes you appreciate the original one even more.
Yes.
Because the original one, once we were panning out on the girl as she's like, you know, resting in bed, and then like we're seeing like the crime scenes, and then it just ends with us knowing that Billy is still in the house.
Yes.
And then it just, that's it. It just cuts to a wide shot of the house, and we're you know, what's going to happen is up to our imaginations.
Yeah. I did not like you know, I read about the studio intervention and I just didn't realize how much it might have ruined the movie. But even if they hadn't done that, I would not have liked the movie any better.
Right. No, for sure. The movie is irredeemable.
It really is. I mean, I will say, though, that the best murder happened to Michelle Trachtenberg.
Okay.
With the machete and just going straight to her head.
I do like this movie because it's so bad. I think for me, it kind of crosses over to like, it's so bad, it's good.
Yeah.
Even rewatching this movie is just like, God, I'm thinking back in my head, like, this movie's so terrible. And yet I'm continuing.
Yeah.
I'm like enjoying it because it's like a train wreck.
It is.
You know, there's some movies that are train wrecks and you just can't stop watching. For me is one of them.
I just also think that they went a little bit too far with some of the violence towards the women in the movies.
I would agree.
I think that's also why I'm like not surprised that Harvey Weinstein, you know, wanted something more violent in the end. And in general, too, it's just like, I don't know. It felt like everything was a bit too much. Even like the scene with the sex tape. I'm like, why is this there?
True. Yeah. That okay, he was another red herring, right? That he could have been the killer.
Yeah.
That was it.
A terrible way. Well, we're going to introduce a sex tape. I just see a bunch of oily, greasy, fat men like coming up with this movie and like all their like six sexual kinks that they want to come up with. That's what this movie feels like.
A little bit, for sure.
Yeah.
I feel like, but I think like contemporary horror movie has that element.
Yeah. Well, you know,
I'm not saying it's a good thing by any means.
Well, maybe of that time period, because in 1974, this was talking about something that was happening in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I guess 2006 was a boring time because the only thing that it was talking about was the fact that other movies were just as gory as it, and they wanted to amp it up. This movie has no purpose. It's not speaking of anything. It doesn't have any like, oh, that was so 2006 of them.
It was so aughts of them.
Yeah, so aughts of them. Like, no, like. There is nothing that it's talking about of its time, which is interesting because that's at least one thing that 2019 does. When you look back on that, you're going to be like, this is so of its time.
It most certainly is. And I think that's an excellent segue.
Helena hasn't gotten home yet. If I were missing, I'd want you to unleash the bloodhounds and track me down. She was at DKO last night.
Still creating problems, huh, Rye?
Hello?
2019's version is directed by a woman.
Interesting.
Screenplay by two women.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Does that bode well?
Well, just letting you guys know. So far. And, it was produced and distributed by Blumhouse, which a lot of people really like for their horror films. My girlfriend, who's a big horror fan, is a big fan of Blumhouse. So she wanted to go see it when.
It's so funny. I was arguing with Eddie at the movie theater about was this a Blumhouse production or not? Because they kept putting BH. I looked it up afterwards. I'm like, oh, it is Blumhouse.
Yeah.
Blumhouse?
I call
Blumhouse.
It. Or Blumhouse, whatever. So the filmmaker of this is Sophie Takal.
Uh-huh.
I had never
What seen a name. Anything. I love that name.
It's a great name.
It's a very pretty name.
She was actually in a movie back in the day that was written by my old screenwriter professor called Gabby on the Roof in July. She was in that. She was Gabby.
Oh.
Yeah. And then I think she started making movies with, like, she was somehow involved with VHS. I'm not quite sure what her role is.
Uh-huh.
Maybe she was just an actress in that, but
okay.
I think she also might have produced it or something. But in terms of things that she directed an episode of Into the Dark, and that's it. This is her first feature film.
Okay.
So, and she's rather young.
Yes.
Earlier in this year, they released a teaser for this movie.
Uh-huh.
And when they did, they also announced the intention behind the movie, that they wanted to remake this movie with more of a girl power message, with more of an empowering message to it. And they wanted to say something with it.
I didn't see this teaser.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found this along my research. And it's interesting, too, because I almost feel like announcing that is such a bad idea.
For sure. For sure. Because the movie was already so heavy with that message, it's just like, did they really think people weren't going to get it, like, in the first act?
Yeah. It was unbelievably heavy-handed. So, in the 2019 version, things that have changed is that, other than the 2019, they don't get phone calls, they get texts.
They get yik-yaks. Or yip-yaps in the movie.
Yeah, yip-yaps.
So, but yik-yak, you know what yik-yaks are, right?
No.
Okay, so yik-yak is like a new social media app for colleges in which you can kind of message people anonymously, maybe not anonymously, do like giant group notifications for like your whole campus. And it's been in the news as of recently because like sometimes people have been posting like possible photos of like bad things happening to women. And course, illicit stuff happening to men, you know, like just bad stuff. So I think it was actually very smart on their end to kind of go with this new social media messaging app, because I think it's more timely.
Yes.
I feel like, Nicole, you're looking at me like, what? Like,
no, I didn't know that. So
you're
I'm
so
learning
out of touch.
This. Yeah.
You got to be with all the cool kids like me.
Are you with college students for long?
I hang out with them all the time.
I didn't know that, and that's really interesting. That's insightful, because at first I was like, you lose something without the voice, but there is something very threatening too about like a toneless like presence that's just like terrorizing you
social
anonymously.
Media. Yeah, I think social media in a way becomes its own tool of terror. And that's very true for like just students of our generation, like high school kids and college kids. Like, kids commit suicide because of social media.
Yeah.
So I think this was probably without a doubt the smartest decision this movie made.
Yeah, I think so too. This movie has a college that we're more present with, Hawthorne College, and we get to know the professor, even one of them, played by Cary Elwes. Is that how you say his name?
I don't know
of Robin Hood and Princess Bride fame.
Oh,
and
why did he have a British accent if he's in an American university?
Yeah, I don't know,
because like it's like a historically American university, so yeah. I don't know many British people who come to America for our colleges.
I guess to make him even more of a tool.
It was a weird
the
decision that they went
it was
with this
weird.
Movie.
But the main girls in this movie are Riley, Chris, Marty, and Jesse.
Uh-huh.
And it's four girls.
Right.
And they're pretty different. But the main character is Riley. And, you know, they don't exclusively tell you, but they tell you in many ways that she had recently accused one of her fellow students, who was in a very big fraternity, of assaulting her.
Not recently.
At least a year ago.
It's been like 3 years.
It had been 3 years?
She was a freshman and she was now a senior.
Well, it felt like it was recently because it was very present. And I think a B story in this movie was her overcoming her trauma. Because
yes.
At the end...
I would say it's probably A, to be honest.
You think it's more about that than anything else?
I mean, this whole story was about a woman overcoming her rape trauma.
No, wasn't it? It ended up becoming something completely differently halfway through the movie. And I was
halfway
like, okay. It was a little confusing. So these girls, one of them had been assaulted, and then the other one is very, like, very liberal, very in your face,
feminist.
You know, political correctness,
outspoken feminist. It borderline, and I think this movie kind of calls out this character for kind of almost being man-hating.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't understand what this messaging for this movie was. It's just like...
I don't either.
Are we man-hating, or are we...
That's the thing. So it's very much, it feels like that. And there's four men we get to really know in this movie. We get to know the professor. We get to know the guy who assaulted her, Marty's boyfriend, and Landon.
Oh, who... actually, we barely get to know the guy who assaulted her.
Yeah, well,
we know him through story. Actually, I would argue we know more about Hawthorne, who's like the founder of the university, than anybody in this movie.
Well, he interacts with her at the climax of the film.
Yes, and they fight.
So, but then we have an example of a movie. So this movie pretty much sets up three types of men. Douchebags.
Right.
Good guys and nice guys. And you know the difference between good guys and nice guys?
Actually, I don't know what the difference was. I thought the nice guy was gay, to be honest. Who's the nice guy?
Landon's the good guy.
Okay, Landon's a good guy.
The nice guy was Marty's boyfriend.
Right, who I thought was gay.
Nate.
I thought he was gay. I thought he was gay. He played gay.
Yeah. In the beginning, you gotta get a sense. Like, I didn't feel like there was any sexual romance.
Other than her sitting on his lap.
Yeah, that was.
He just, I don't know, he sounded gay. Well, I actually would have appreciated he was just gay, to be honest.
I would have appreciated gayness in this movie, but I almost feel like this movie had such an agenda that it had no time for gay people.
It did. You're right.
So, yeah. So there's good guys and nice guys. Do you know the difference?
Tell us.
Essentially, like, when women refer to nice guys, it's guys who swear that they're nice, but they end up being incredible douchebags. And there are guys who use the phrase like, well, not all men are like this and not all men are like that. And you women and this and that. So nice guys are the guys who come off as a nice guy at first and then turns out to be just like the rest of them. Okay. That's what they're referred to.
We'll start with the spoiler alert here like this movie, the original, the first two are all like just some psychotic killer. Mm-hmm. This one goes supernatural, which was a weird choice,
for me.
It threw me off. I actually will say I was like down probably with the first two acts of the movie. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a good movie, but I was just like, okay, they're trying to make a point and they're really sticking to it. Mm-hmm. Once they introduced this whole supernatural element, I was just like,
it lost me.
I'm checking out.
Completely.
This is when I woke up, actually.
Yeah.
I love the this twist.
So the supernatural twist too is that the Mr. Hawthorne himself, who founded the college, apparently predicted that women were going to become powerful enough to somewhat overthrow the male population.
Yeah.
So he created some sort of magical substance that the men in this college would be able to resurrect. And once they got it, they would have supernatural power in order to kill women.
To make them subservient. They would kill the ones who are not. Yeah.
No, but then the subservient one they killed.
Again, this movie made no sense.
It didn't make any sense.
He's like, I just want to prove a point. Even though I've killed all these other women, let me kill you too.
Yeah, just to make a point. Yeah.
They were using the poor pledges to kill. Also, that's the other. So, again, it kind of goes with that theme of like consent, because these poor pledges are obviously not consenting to murdering people, but mm-hmm. they're just tools. I don't know. This movie was...
It was a little weird.
Muddied all over the place.
So, you know, it's interesting, too, because with, like, your whole inner, like, conversation that you had while watching this movie, if they had taken that element out, do you think...
The supernatural element?
Yeah.
Okay. And kind of stuck to a kind of just stuck to, killer?
Like... Yeah, like, asshole fraternity boys who want to get back at women who are, like, giving them bad reputations. Would you have liked it more?
I think I would have liked it more.
And then, two, the portrayal of men... Right, because we have a really strong feminist, overly political tone in this film.
Yes.
But this movie then, because of the black magic idea, introduces the theme that actually all this behavior that you're so unpleased with, they're not even responsible for.
Well, that's the thing. It's not that they're not responsible for it.
Mm-hmm.
The black magic just gives them an excuse to go overboard with it.
Yes.
So,
but then because of the way that she interacted with the guy who had assaulted her,
maybe it was Billy. He was like the former president of the fraternity.
He was a former, yeah. Okay, so a movie that's so overly, you know, feminist and stuff, do you think that by adding that element, they kind of let men...
Off the hook?
Off the hook, yeah.
That's a good question. I think so, to be honest. I think it does a little bit. But I think you think it keeps them on the hook?
So what it does is, I think what it made for me, it made it palatable to watch this point.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that they are... I can believe that there are people with that kind of cruel, dark intention.
Yeah.
Right? I can believe that. I just can't believe that they were all like that. Killing girls.
Mm-hmm.
And so I knew that, okay, so you have this evil element, you have this evil intention that's present. And the fact that there was also people that were, I guess, they're zombies or whatever.
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah, they're mind slaves. Doing this bidding, it made it, okay, so this is entertaining, but I'm also getting the message. Rape culture, mm-hmm. getting the message on abuse, how we treat women, and just kind of like just that culture of just the disrespect that we do or that we continue in our educational system.
Yeah, but you know it's interesting because rape culture is real. Supernatural elements like this are not real. So when you're trying to make something that's cathartic and something that's supposed to be also like a commentary on something that is really real and triggering, and then you add that as kind of like what felt like an excuse for it at the end of the day, which I'm not like, I don't want to by any means say, well, I didn't like that they let men off the hook because all men are assholes. I don't think so. That's not what I'm trying to say. But at the end of the day, too, it's like you can't tackle something that strong and that relevant and add in something that fantastical. I think it's disrespectful.
Okay, I agree with you 100% on that one. And I think for me, though, the reason I think it kind of does leave them off the hook is because the good guys fall prey to this black magic.
Yes.
Right? And that's, I think, what ultimately excuses the behaviors of... I mean, the bad guys, they're still assholes and they mm-hmm. clearly have this mindset already. But at the same time, it's like the way this movie leads you to believe is like they wouldn't act upon these instincts if it wasn't for the black magic.
Yes.
Which kind of then suddenly excuses their behavior, which is not the case. They're...
Yeah. Well, it was something that was alive in them always, and this black magic just brought it out in them. Mm-hmm. Is that also something that the movie might be implying? I mean, but it's weird because it's kind of saying different things about men, and I don't really know what it is. And I don't want, as a woman, as the only woman here too, I'm like, I don't want to see a film that says we're going to make something that's female empowering and overly feminist and leave it thinking I felt like that was just misandrist at the end of the day.
Yes. I mean, this movie teetered for sure on misandry.
Yeah.
Well, that's like, this is like the second movie like in recent times we covered that, like,
yeah, that I accused of misandry.
Yeah.
I mean, also I think that it just confused the message.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it was unbelievably preachy, but like they were so concerned with the message that they forgot how important things like plot and characters. You know, like I felt like none of the girls were fleshed out. I felt like the only one who possibly was Riley.
Riley
was, because she also was the only one who had closure with her assault and her trauma. But the other girls were totally interchangeable. You know, like Marty, I had no real identity of.
Even her bestie?
The one who went upstairs and was like trying on the lights. I'm like, wait,
which one? Those were all forgettable. Yeah,
forgettable. Marty, I wish there was more Marty, you know, but then like the one who was really, really, was it Chris?
It
was just like the one who
was Chris.
Like, was overly feminist and shit.
Okay, that's Chris.
Not like that's all she did. That's
true.
All she did.
She was very one. No, but you're right. I was gonna say it's like no. She pushes.
She's Riley.
Riley, but like she pushes her because of. Well, I mean, they're also in this like fucked up situation.
Yeah,
so it's just like you had no choice.
Well, I mean, they made her character be the one who wanted to cower away and not have to deal with it. But then she came back and fought. I liked the twist of that, the fact that this was happening to two different sororities with the cop.
That
thing.
Was an interesting twist.
That was a good editing thing. That was one of the good things I have to say about this movie. I do like also, do you think it was because they wanted a good rating that they maybe cut it out and it was an editing choice, or the fact that they intentionally did not show a lot of violence in the...
Exactly. I had such a problem with that.
So I talked to Eddie about this. I'm mm-hmm. pretty sure this is for the lower rating.
Okay.
I think they edited this film to be a PG-13 to kind of appeal to like a wider audience. You can tell because, well, I mean, you don't know for sure, but like the way it's edited, like it seems like it always cuts up to the point of violence. So belief is that they filmed that stuff and they just never added it in the final cut.
It also sounds like they're saying things like son of a cut. Like PG stuff like that too. I'm like, PG-13. Why are they doing that?
Yeah.
Well, it was interesting because the theater that I went to was essentially empty. I feel like people are not about this movie. And I wonder if it's because, one, the trailer gives away the whole fucking movie. But two, the over political correctness kind of shines through without even seeing the film. Because it's not like your typical like women being killed one by one. It's women fighting back movie. And people, do they want to see that?
I did because I actually like the last scene,
oh, no.
Women kicking ass.
The ending was perfect. That was the best thing about the movie. Just have her leave the house, watch it burn, end movie.
That's true. Perfect. Watching the burning was incredibly
satisfying. That was cathartic. Yeah. And that, I was like, good job there. Mm-hmm. Because with the last one, we had to watch them at the hospital and shit continued.
Right.
You know, and that was even more of a callback to the original where it felt like, you know, it's all over. Where is it? And this one, it was all over. And
this one, it was definitely
like, kind of, where is it? But it was just like, end it there. Uh-huh. You know, the shit ended, the movie ends.
Right.
No, the post-credit scene with the cat licking the black.
Oh, that's true.
There was a post-credit scene?
Yeah. There's a cat licking the black goo. Does that mean this carries over into the cat?
Pet know. Cemetery I'm crossover.
Just like thinking like, why would, what, that was unnecessary. Like,
it was.
That's what the whole, I don't know. You know, this movie had potential because this movie's not as bad as the 2006 one, but like.
No, I would agree. Yeah.
It just lost itself in the message, I guess. This movie, what do you think this movie's trying to say?
I don't know. And that's what confuses me about this movie. Because like, yeah. Like, if you just gave me the first two acts of this movie and then it says like, now you make up the ending. You can literally look at the first two acts and be like, okay, so this the fraternity guys are going to be the serial killers. Obviously, we've planted the teacher. He's not going to be a serial killer. He's going to be a red herring, as I thought it was going to be. Mm. It's actually going to be the president, who I guess we all kind of suspected, but like we're just going to confirm that.
Yeah.
And I did like the twist of one of the sorority sisters being a backstabber.
Yeah.
I think that was a nice twist.
That was okay.
It was a fine twist. Yeah. In terms of twist, I didn't see it coming.
No, like the beginning scene, yeah.
You know what it was? You know why I didn't see it coming, though? The mm-hmm. whole movie had gone so batshit crazy that I, at that point, had no idea what to expect.
Well, yeah, and you didn't remember her, you know? Like, yeah. when did they meet this girl?
Wasn't she Claire?
No.
Oh, she wasn't Claire, okay.
No, she was in the first scene of the movie where uh-huh. she gives her the thing, and then we see her again. Mm. And I don't know, this movie was a disappointment, unfortunately.
It was. It's, I don't know. They tried something. I find it interesting that it was all women writing and like a woman director. That doesn't bode well, I think, for their track record right now in terms of the stuff that we've covered on this podcast. And it's like female written and female directed.
Well, what else was female written and directed? Charlie's Angels. Very good. The screenplay was written by women?
It was written by Elizabeth Banks.
What are you talking about? You loved Kristen Stewart.
I like Kristen Stewart. I didn't like the movie itself, though.
You didn't? Huh.
Yeah.
Well, that's a shame. This is not boring.
it's an interesting trend right now that we're going, and I don't know, again, it's just like, what is it? Like, this, remember, we talked about this when we talked about Lady and the Tramp, right? Mm-hmm. Where you see media kind of doing an overcorrection, so they steer into one lane, and they went too far into it that when you just, you know, you end up just, like, getting off-road.
Yeah. You know, for sure, and just, I think movies, sometimes, they just don't, especially in this age, there's too much clouding their view or their minds or whatever, but they don't get it right. I can't remember the last time I saw a movie and I felt like it really accurately spoke to what I was experiencing, had a good commentary on my life right now.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe a movie like 20 years ago. But nowadays, I think it's just, I don't know, there's too much going on. We're kind of like lost in the haze. Mm-hmm. And our movies are reflecting that.
For sure.
It's kind of crazy.
That's going to be the mark of this period.
Yeah.
It's just like the PC. We're in for sure a PC period. My fear, though, is that like once we start moving towards the PC, there's going to be now an overcorrection and going like too hard and just completely offending everybody. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So I don't know.
At the end of the day, though, Black Christmas is trying to make this a female empowerment genre when horror is already a female empowerment genre. We didn't need this to happen. I kind of like thought we like, hey, everybody, here's the movie you needed. And it's like, no, we didn't need this.
So do you think this movie is a direct response to the 2006 version?
No, I think that this movie is just what it appears to be. I mean, it might be, but I think this is also a case of something that we've spoken about with a lot of films this year is that it didn't need Black Christmas to be a movie. This movie had an agenda and it said, well, people will see if it's a remake, so let's call it Black Christmas instead of Dark Christmas. And that's it. Like, this movie had nothing to do with the original.
That's true. Outside of the fact that it's just sorority girls getting killed on Christmas Eve, you're right. This movie had nothing to do with
not many callbacks like the 2001, the 2006 one did.
Mm-hmm.
So it was very much its own movie.
Right.
And it had a very now statement to it. Mm-hmm. So, but again, it was lost in the sauce. It was lost in its own message.
Yeah, for sure.
And it should have stuck to one thing. You either be, if you're going to be preachy, but don't add some fucking supernatural nonsense to it. And if you're going to do the supernatural stuff, focus on that.
Mm-hmm.
Focus, people.
It's true.
Do we think we needed this movie?
No.
No, we didn't need this movie. I mean, it's going to be an interesting revisiting it years from now in terms of, wow, like, I wonder how much our culture will change in revisiting and being like, this is what we were preoccupied with in 2019. But, like, other than that, this didn't make me feel like, well, this is the statement we needed. This is the movie we needed. This is the horror revamping we needed. Like, no, none of that. I don't think we needed it at all. I think Black Christmas was perfect in 1974 for the serial killer era and having the representation of women and horror that it did then, because look at what it inspired.
Uh-huh.
I don't think this film's going to inspire that much.
No, I agree with you. In fact, it's going to, like I said, I think my fear is just, like, it's just going to make us go one direction of just like, just getting going away with PC culture and stuff, which I think that's not, I don't want that.
Yeah.
You know,
no.
As like a gay minority, like, I don't want to be the butt of jokes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I feel like you have these movies that are trying to overcorrect, like Disney did with Lady and Tramp. Like, this movie is doing with, like, it's trying to make a statement about rape culture and stuff in colleges. You know, I just fear like we're heading. I mean, look at who's in office. You know, it started.
Yeah. What was your favorite movie?
Oh, I want to go with the original.
The original?
The original. I mean, the 2006 one will always hold a place in my heart for being so bad it's good, but it's the original one is just such a. It's just excellent filmmaking.
Yeah, no, rank them. The best is 74. Second best would have to be 2019, and the worst being 2006.
That's a good order, I would agree. Yeah. I think I'm going to put this out there. I try not to recommend movies for people, but like, I think our audiences should really check out the original Black Christmas.
Yes.
It's not a well-known movie.
It's not.
And it's a shame because it's really good, and it still holds up.
It really does.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's... I think that this should be considered one of the greatest horror films of all time.
And it is usually by horror aficionados.
Yeah.
But like literally for only that group of people.
Yeah.
But all right.
Okay.
That's that.
Well, Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Merry Christmas and Happy Holidays.
Hope we don't get murdered.
You know what? I'm okay if you do.
Well, until next time.
Stay unoriginal.